to 80% of their products which they market come out of that 20% of free time.
Now this is fascinating. This is very important because when we look at complex systems, we look at the different dimensions: the social, the cultural, the technical, the political, and the physical. What you've just described is how the physical environment is acting as part of an enabler to create that environment that facilitates self-organization. So thank you very much. That, you know, the physical we often forget, but it is so important. And providing that kind of space is, in fact, does help enormously. Who would like to go next?
This is in terms of self-organizing teams. We had a meeting of partnership officers, coastal partnership officers from around the country, all operating independently, all struggling with similar issues. And we met for another reason. But actually from that we spawned a national organisation to link those partnerships together, both sharing knowledge but also to increase range of influence with government and so on. And that came spontaneously from a number of us in the bar,
yes,
just talking about,
yes,
we've got to think of better ways of working.
Yes, absolutely. Excellent example. Thank you very much. Okay. Who would like to go next?
Yeah. Ours was about kind of a lot of stuff was things building up from the community level. So it's generally about when people are really aggrieved or really passionate about a particular issue, then they come together and do it. And the example that we talked about was around the breakdown of kind of, especially in rural communities, of services and communities coming together and just delivering them themselves, like things like shops and pubs and stuff like that. And yeah, we'd said a lot of it was, and there was also the thing about something self-organisation doesn't always lead to innovation. There's sometimes that people become self-organised to keep the status quo. So we had some discussion around that.
Uh-huh.
And we'll move on to the second one as well.
If you like.
Yeah. And the thing about how it can be facilitated or constrained,
yeah,
we talked about kind of trust, risk,
yes,
aversion.
Yes.
And the idea of kind of,
yes,
no failure, just feedback, so that you've got to recognise that failure will happen and take the positives out of it.
Yes, exactly. Actually, I'd like to pick up a couple of those points. One is in terms of communities, because again, a lot of the work we've done, supported by the theory, actually says you cannot achieve change one way. And for example, we've been doing some work on energy and climate change and looking at transition towns, where you have the community actually working together to try and make a difference. But that is not enough by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens at the next scale up? Who is going to fund medical research some of the big medical challenges? Who's going to provide the infrastructure for water, for electricity, etc., etc.? So we need to think of those different levels, and again, think in terms of the multiple levels interacting, because it is never just one. And that's a discussion I have had, in fact, with the European Commission as well, where they have this amazing view that if only they can persuade all the member states to bring in certain legislation, the problem will be solved. And of course, the argument, of course it will not be solved. In fact, that's the wrong way to go about it. You've got to allow every single citizen to actually contribute before you actually can make the difference. So again, we're coming back to this idea, how do you create the enabling environment for every citizen to want to be involved and make that contribution? So I think that is, that's the point I wanted to pick up there.
Our example follows on very nicely from that.
Oh, good.
We also looked at each other in silence. And I remember a number of years ago, I was working with a group of heroin users in Leicester, and the police, the CDT, we'd all failed to get them off. They kept on riffing, stepping stuff up their arms. And then, for some reason, four or five of them got themselves together and said, "That's it, that's enough, we're going to quit." And they formed spontaneous, the most dynamic, intense, successful self-help group I've ever seen in my life, We'd all failed, but they'd got themselves and done it together, and they did it. They're straight and clean
yeah.
now. And I, secondly,
yes.
how can that be
yes.
facilitated?
Yeah.
I don't know. It happened, and I wish I did. They were amazing. They had.
Mm-hmm.
I think
yes.
it was just themselves. So
yes.
It was fascinating
yes.
to watch.
Yes. Now, I'll pick that up as well, because constantly people see these successful experiments or examples in one case, and people, how can we copy what has happened that you can't copy?
Mm.
Why?
Because it was unique.
The individuals
involved. Once you've transferred it into a different environment, you have different initial conditions. Because what we tend to transfer is what was done and how it was done. If we understand why did it happen in that context, and what would have stopped it happening in that context, and then we can transfer the underlying principles, the why, and adapt them into a new context. But until we've done that, we cannot copy best practice, full stop. And I think that's very, very important. So if you wanted to go back and understand, truly understand, without any sort of prejudgment, why did that happen in that case, you'll probably be
I
able to...
I didn't ask why,
yeah.
why, I mean, enough
sort
of thing, no. but it was
yeah.
the right time.
Yeah, but it's how you do it, how you ask the whys. Okay, another group, please. Yeah.
We just gave an example of many of us have been working in the leadership program, and our responsibility was to tell the Suffolk story, and with a group of 20 or 30 people, and we'd have the Suffolk story explained to us specifically. It's sort of a thing out there almost, but we had to tell it, and then we had to portray it by acting it out on stage.
Uh-huh.
And that process was, I think, illustrates some of the points that there was an idea that was formed, which was a very hard idea, very specific, very detailed, but it was put into the group, and the group then worked on that and produced something over a course of a few weeks. A 10-15 minutes that captured some of those ideas,
yes.
but made them achievable and deliverable in a way that the group was able to support.
Oh, great.
So that some of the issues that we talked about was, you know, that the group being open,
yes.
sort of no one taking a directive role or a sort of being committed to a single idea, and being open to explore it with your colleagues.
Lovely, thank you. And I think there's one more group here.
Well, we sort of, well, we talked a long time, there's a lot of different examples that come up with, but one that I sort of launched in at the end was actually something that's happening around the total place agenda in Suffolk, and that I and some other people in the room formed an administrative body, which was gathered together as an administrative body, a support body to the leaders in Suffolk, to help them be free thinkers and on their businesses. So in a way, we were an organised group, which from that became self-organised by having an idea and deciding that actually we wanted to take it on, and we were going to develop it, and we were going to try and win support for it.
Yeah.
So it's a totally self-governing group in essence now. We only meet because we want to. And we're not in. If we're not in it because we want to be in it, then we leave. And that's very much the principle I think that we go on to. But I think the stage that we're at now, a couple of interesting questions that Nani and jotted down earlier was, almost by being self-organised, we want to be formalised. And it's the tension between, we're self-organised,
yes.
how do we get funding, we need more resource, therefore we have to become formalised. But recognising that we want to remain self-organised, because that's where the innovation is.
Great. Yes, there is that constant tension between starting as a self-organizing group, organized group, and then wanting to move into that more formal process. So you need to keep that tension. Okay, co-evolution is the next. Now, you've all familiar with evolution. I expect not so many are familiar with the term co-evolution. So that's what I want to explain. If we take two groups, two organizations, two industries, etc. I'm taking two for simplicity, for make it simple, but it could be multiple. If there is reciprocal influence between these interacting entities, shall we call them, so that the reciprocal influence affects the behavior of the interacting entities, we have co-evolution. If it's one way, if it's one organization, one individual, one group changing because their environment needs that change, it is adaptation to the changes or the demands of the environment. Now, think about an initiative you have taken. You made some significant change in your organization. Now, your organization does not exist in a vacuum or in isolation. What you've done is going to affect other people that you are interacting with. The police is probably a very, very good example that, you know, what you, new ways of working, new initiatives that you take is going to affect the local communities, it's going to affect all sorts of people around you. Now, if that effect means that they change their behavior and the change in that behavior comes back to and affects you, that is co-evolution. So it is that reciprocal change going backwards and forwards. It's a very, very dynamic process. So when we think about change, most of you mentioned change in something that you've said. We need to keep this dynamic in mind. When we bring about change, it is not going to happen in isolation. The change we bring about is going to not only affect other people, it's going to come back through their change behavior and affect us. And sometimes we need to think that one step ahead. How is that going to happen? Now, one of the things that really, really keeps me awake at night is we are all now making huge changes to adapt to climate change in order to meet the targets of reducing our carbon footprint, et cetera, our energy consumption. No one is thinking, what are going to be the impacts and the consequences of that adaptation? And that frightens me, because that's precisely what has been happening with the financial crisis. There were a lot of actions taken as a response, as a knee-jerk response, and that very often happens with knee-jerk responses, without thinking further ahead, what is the longer-term effect of that action and decision? So, we, as I said, we need to think of that dynamic when we take these big decisions. Now, sometimes we may not be able to see the co-evolutionary effect in a short period of time. What we may see is short-term adaptation, but that short-term adaptation, if it then has that reciprocal effect on others, will in a longer term show the co-evolutionary effect. So co-evolution is a very, very powerful dynamic, and it's something we really do need to be aware of. The other thing I want to explore with you is exploration of the space of possibilities. Now, this is very, very important if you're thinking about innovation. So what I'm talking about there is exploring new options, new ideas, different ways of working and relating. Now, I'm going to throw a little sort of hand grenade here and say we all think of the optimum as something desirable, an optimum strategy, an optimum way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Well, what I would like to offer the idea is the optimum can only be desirable and appropriate within one set of conditions. Once those conditions change, that solution no longer optimum. So what are you going to do when your environment has changed?
Reach a new equilibrium.
But how do you do that? If you have not already explored some alternatives, you are left high and dry. So the idea here is, yes, you work on what you're successful at, what is working, but you don't stay with that exclusively. You need at the same time to start exploring some other alternatives. That is called multiple micro-strategies, because when the environment has changed, you have already explored some ideas, and one of them may be the one that fits the new environment. And again, you know, the financial crisis, I think, showed that over and over and over again, that those who had alternatives in how to operate were able to continue. Those who had just the one solution, the one strategy, their, you know, what they call their optimum strategy, simply went under because they could not respond fast enough. So what I'm talking about there in the last point is the multiple micro strategies. We also, you know, it's the distributed strategies. It's the idea that the center doesn't always have the best ideas. I work with a lot of global organizations, and it's a constant struggle to try and get them to understand that one single solution cannot apply worldwide, because there are different cultures, there are different ways of working. Particularly, and again I come back to the IT people, IT systems, we worked with a large pharmaceutical company that were really thought they had this brilliant idea of having one strategy throughout 44 markets, and it was only one solution for all 44 markets, and they kept finding a lot of problems and a lot of issues because there was a lot of resistance locally. And what they were finding were, in fact, locally, people were solving the problems much more easily, much more directly, because they knew their local market, etc. And it's allowing that to happen. You allow distributed strategies. You allow the multiple strategies. And that happens in a very, in a way, cheap way. You are exploring your multiple strategies in a local context. If it doesn't work, it hasn't brought the organization down, because it only hasn't worked in that one place. But if it has worked, then you can try and understand, and what we talked about later, you know, how do you then understand it and learn from it and adapt it into a broader context. So it is this local global tension that can be resolved. You can have both, but you can't have just one single solution applied globally.
Can I just ask, would you still have an overall strategy?
Yes.
Keep those strategies in place in some way?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, with IT systems, it's usually the infrastructure is common, but it's the applications that can be allowed to vary locally. So you have both, but you cannot have everything homogeneous throughout.
Mm. And organizationally, that's the same. Forget the IT part of
it. Yes,
that would apply.
Exactly, it would. It's the healthiest and the most robust and the most resilient way for a large organization to exist. Yes, sir.
What is the difference between what you're describing and what in some management terms, or what used to be called tight, loose management? So you have a tight overall strategy, but you have a relaxed way of allowing people to implement it. Is there something different, or
It is an interpretation of it. What I'm giving you is the theoretical underpinning that explains why that works. Any other points, questions.
Can I just make a comment?
Yes.
I think one of the things that organisations find difficult with this is actually that the issue is setting a vision which is about, really is about vision, and not about telling the organisation what to do.
Exactly.
Where do you want to go,
yes,
and then allowing the organisation to find a way of getting there.
Yes.
Don't tell them how to do it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Peter. I think that is a very, very important. It's the how. You know, allow that self-organisation to happen at the local level, that flexibility, so that they will then own the how and actually make it happen. Oh, just go back, the other bit, the distributed power and distributed intellectual capital. Again, this is something we need to consider. Our organisations are very, very rich in terms of the intelligence that is available right through the organisation at every single level. And very often we tend to forget and ignore that. And it is again saying, how can we actually take that, you know, make it possible for that distributed intelligence to actually be heard. Okay. The reason why you need multiple micro strategies is that if you're very successful, you're at the top of that peak. This is called a fitness landscape, and it comes from biology, and it says that when a species sort of climbs this fitness landscape and it becomes very fit in a particular context, in a particular environment. Now, when that environment changes, that peak has gone all the way down into a valley. So think about a children's bouncy castle. And then you have the idea of a very dynamic, changing fitness landscape. Because every time a person moves on that bouncy castle, the whole thing changes. So you also get the idea here of connectivity, interdependence as well. And that you cannot actually stay in one position forever, because the environment around you is constantly moving. So this is a fitness landscape. Now, how can we think of something that comes from biology in a human context? So we could think about it as applied to the evolutionary journey of an organization, but we need to think of it in terms of multiple micro strategies exploring the space of possibilities. That's the one I find most useful. But also we need to consider, and this is where co-evolution comes in, that the success of strategies of one organization is determined by the strategies of the other entities in the same social ecosystem. So we don't exist in isolation. We influence each other. So we have an intercoupling of landscapes with a richness of individual interactions that alter the co-evolutionary dynamics. Now, this is rather, theoretically very dense, but it has a very, very practical application. And what it says is, don't rely on one strategy, one solution. You need to be constantly exploring alternatives, particularly when you're doing well, particularly when you're at the top of the hill and you really are doing brilliantly, because you can guarantee it's not going to last forever. Okay, now, another interesting notion, and I'm putting a bit of emphasis on that because of the innovation summit that we've got. How do we do exploration? Do we explore every single possibility there is? Well, we can't. So I'll give you just two ways of doing exploration. One is called exaptation, and it's not a misspelling. Now, what is exaptation? Exaptation is seeing a new function in something that already exists. So, what's common with Viagra, Post-its, non-stick pans?
They were trying to invent something else.
Exactly. and it was, quotes, a mistake, but somebody had the brilliant idea to see it not as a mistake, but as a new possibility. That's exaptation.
Yeah, post-its, he was trying to invent very strong glue.
Yeah.
And he invented one that came on.
And Viagra, I think that was for a heart condition, wasn't it?
Unintended consequences.
Okay, so it would be very interesting when you're doing your discussions to come up with some examples actually of exaptations, because again, you know, think of exaptation as a one way of doing the search. How do you facilitate it? The next one is what is called the next adjacent. Now, this we can see in technology all the time when we have a new technology that was not thought of a few months ago, and suddenly it opens up new possibilities, new applications, new devices, etc., etc. So once that big step is taken, then we just go one step away from it. So what this actually explains is the nature of change. It is not only the big step, it is also the incremental step. The two are happening at the same time, in a way. The incremental change needs to happen after the big change to bring us to start exploring the possibilities of that one. So two ways of doing the search. There are many more, but I thought I'll give you two to play with. So now, if you could please identify some, you don't have to identify all of them, but pick the ones that you find particularly appealing, and then ask which of the above and which other characteristics we've discussed of complexity, of complex systems, facilitate innovation, and how. So that's quite a tough one. Okay. Oh yes, yes. If you want to have a quick break and go and get a cup of tea or coffee, I'm sorry, I have to work you very hard because it's an awful lot to go through. So you know, make your break sort of quick and come back for to your discussion.
What is it? I don't get it.